with Allbirds. I started working on that as a curiosity project in 2007. I was playing sport at the time. I had my afternoons free and I didn't want to waste them. And I started sort of getting really curious about this category and this industry and set up to literally in my off-season visit a footwear factory. And I kind of, you know, I had no idea really what I was trying to do, except that there was a personal problem that I, you know, that I had around footwear. And so I set out to solve it.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. A native of New Zealand, Tim Brown was always well-versed in the magical qualities of merino wool. Inherently curious, he began asking himself why such a remarkable, sustainable resource was virtually absent in the footwear industry. And with that spirit of Tim's wonder, the Allbirds journey began. Tim's journey is, of course, our typical 10-year overnight how success happens story. See, Tim, he was an amazing soccer player. In fact, he probably still is. He was even named as captain of New Zealand's 2010 FIFA World Cup team. But Tim, he was never meant to be just a footballer. He was always curious and always seeming to learn more. He started researching athletic footwear, spending entire off-seasons traveling the globe and immersing himself in the ins and outs of the shoe industry. His path took him to many places around the world, until it finally took him to San Francisco, where he teamed up with his co-founder, Joey Zwillinger, and they officially launched, or shall I say relaunched, Allbirds in 2016, a company built on the premise of creating environmentally friendly and sustainable shoes. And get this, in just 4 short years, Allbirds is incredibly already a $1 billion brand. Tim Brown has had such an interesting and amazing life, and he's achieved so many different successes in a short period of time. But as it usually is, it wasn't always success, and there was tons of failures along the way. But one thing I had to know as we started the interview was, what is it like to be part of the World Cup?
Thanks for having me. Well, yeah, gosh, it's hard to put that one in words. But, you know, and honestly, when I look back, it's one of those ones where I'm not quite sure if it happened or not. But we were there. I was part of a New Zealand team that went to the World Cup in South Africa in 2010. It was the first time in 28 years that New Zealand had been, only the second time ever. And yeah, I mean, it changed, in really simple terms, it changed my life.
Yeah, I could imagine that. You know, I'm a sports fan, and obviously just, I can only imagine what that's like coming out with that crowd and representing your country. I mean, that's got to be something that I would imagine, even with what you've done with Allbirds and building this incredible business, I would imagine that feeling or that opportunity ranks right up there in your life in terms of things that you have done.
Well, it's funny. I actually ended up in the last warm-up game against Australia in front of 70,000 people at the MCG, a big cricket ground, if you know that sporting arena, breaking my shoulder. So I went to the World Cup, but never actually got on the field. And it was a huge disappointment to me. So this sort of mixed memories, but the day that I go back to was actually the game that we qualified, which was in my hometown of Wellington. We beat Bahrain to go through to the World Cup, and in front of the biggest home crowd ever for a soccer match. And it was one of those games where you just knew that if we could find a way to win it, a whole world of possibility literally would open up. And if we didn't, that, you know, it was fine. And we'd done really well to get where we were. But we won that game. We went to the World Cup. And I really used that experience to sort of literally for my business school application and for the next chapter of the journey that would become ultimately Allbirds. So in so many different ways, both on and off the field, that was a sort of a life-changing 90 minutes of sport.
I could only imagine, and I can only imagine having that experience, especially then going to business school, probably as a little bit of an older guy, but just having that experience. Most typical people who enter
business school. Most typical people in the world never had that experience. So for me, when I understood that, I could only imagine how important that was to your Allbirds story. And I want to talk about Allbirds and the start of Allbirds and what an incredible company it is and how quickly you have built it. But take me back, because it seems like you really had this idea for athletic footwear that this goes further back than 5 years when you launched this business. Can you give me or tell me about kind of the origins and how it came about?
Yeah, I mean, similarly to my soccer career, it was sort of a struggle for a long time and a battle. And I faced a series of obstacles. You know, didn't get drafted out of college, didn't get the opportunities in MLS that I wanted, played in the second tier competition in America, got rejected in English clubs, and finally found a home in the professional game in the Australian A-League, and then very quickly was part of a New Zealand team that went to the World Cup, and then everyone wants to be a friend. And you missed the 9 years when the story wasn't very good and the 1 year where it was. And similarly with Allbirds, I started working on that as a curiosity project in 2007. I was playing sport at the time. I had my afternoons free and I didn't want to waste them. And I started sort of getting really curious about this category and this industry and set up to literally in my off-season visit a footwear factory. And I kind of, you know, I had no idea really what I was trying to do, except that there was a personal problem that I, you know, that I had around footwear. And so I set out to solve it. And it wasn't until March 1st, 2016 that Allbirds.com officially went live. So I mean, you're talking about, you know, 9 years of sort of preparation for the moment. And even then, we still had an enormous amount of work to do to kind of prove ourselves. And so I think I've seen it twice now, this sort of 10-year journey to have success is being my patent twice.
You know, it seems like that is the way it goes. It's like the 10-year overnight success story. But when you going back, and what was the issue? Because I look back 10 years ago, you know, to me, when I looked at athletic footwear, and I'm not a sneaker guy, but I'm thinking Nike, Adidas, like they have this covered. What was the hole that you saw that, you know, for you as an athlete, you wanted to change?
Well, it was kind of three holes, and they sort of, those three holes make up the three pillars of our business. And the first one was a design one. I was sponsored by one of the big giant sportswear companies that I won't name, and got lots of free gear, and every single piece of it had a giant logo, and it changed all the time for no good reason. And as a sort of a design minimalist, I was craving something simple that I didn't really see on the shelves of the Foot Locker that was unadorned with logos and brand and was basic, as crazy as that sounds. And so that's what I set out to create. I, you know, the second big hole was walking into my first footwear factory and realizing that everything was made from synthetics and not very nice materials, and realizing that there was an entire opportunity to use things like wool, which was a sort of a, you know, a foundational a part of the New Zealand story, and why had that not been done? Sort of a simple question that no one really could answer for me. And then ultimately over time, and the fast forward sort of 5-6 years, when I met my co-founder Joey, you realize the third hole was that the entire industry and the entire world has a sort of sustainability problem, and yep, that there was an opportunity to build a different type of business that really tried to tackle that, not just because it was the right thing to do, but because there was a business opportunity within it. And so it wasn't enough just to do one of those things. You kind of had to piece this thing together and connect the dots, and probably lean into a lot of experts, that the criticism and feedback from a lot of experts that basically told you to sit down and be quiet.
It seems like, though, that just from your telling me of your past as a professional athlete, you know, it seems to me you were a guy who worked hard to get, and forgive me for saying this, but in a way that drove you to overachieve. Do you think that same mindset, did you take that same mindset when you came out with this idea? And I'm sure there was tons of naysayers, I'd love to hear about it. But that same mindset you had as an athlete, has that helped you as an entrepreneur?
Good, but I was never a World Cup talent. But I realized that the challenge of sort of pushing yourself and being competitive and making the most of every ounce of ability that I had was sort of what I wanted to do, and see how far I could take it, and took it further than I could have imagined, and did that as part of a team. And I think that was the bit where I realized the role I could play was beyond just my own individual contribution, that I could be part of a group and help that group maybe achieve things. And that was just a feeling that was really powerful. And when I retired, that left a big gap less so that I miss the actual sport, but more the sense of being part of this high-performing group. And building a business really was my gateway back into that feeling. And not just doing it to sell shoes, which is something that I struggled with for a little bit, which we can get into, but actually doing it for a larger purpose. And when we were part of that New Zealand team going to the World Cup, yeah, it was about winning a game of sport, but it was also for this, for your country, and you were prepared to go and do things that you were beyond your scope of possibility just because it meant that much. And similarly, in the context of Allbirds, we're on a journey to create a different type of company anchored in solving the challenge of sustainability and sustainably made products. So it's a bigger thing. And I think it's attracted an incredible group of people. And I think I'm part of this organization that's moving in a similar sort of way to the sporting one. And it's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, it's so great to hear, because I know there's a lot of athletes, and coming from that business too, just in terms of my background, knowing a lot of athletes, a lot of times these athletes are extremely successful and then they go into business. And sometimes it works out, and sometimes they do incredible things, like the stories of Magic Johnson and others, and Junior Bridgman, who built up a wealth of very early on, you know, in the 80s and 90s, a wealth of franchises. And these guys were extremely successful. And I don't want to get too off focus, but I want to ask you, because I don't know if you watched, I saw the Last Dance about Michael Jordan.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's the only thing we can all do right now, unfortunately. But it was very interesting to me, and I want to get your opinion. I think Michael Jordan was by far the best basketball player I ever watched. I love Kobe. I love some of these other guys, Magic, but Michael Jordan was far and away the best basketball player I ever watched. And I was amazed. His mentality, though, was he would make up stuff, even in his mind, that this person slighted him. And I can see that working. Like, that works, because I know I still play pickup. I'm horrible, but I still play. And like, when someone slights me and says, like, this guy stinks, or like, it makes me play better. But one thing I think with Jordan, and I'm curious what you think, is that does not work in the boardroom. That does not work building a business. And it seems like your mindset was much more team and growing and building rather than just motivating that way. Is that true? Do you think that doesn't work? And what you did obviously does work?
Well, it's such a fascinating question. And I really enjoyed that documentary, not necessarily because it was enjoyable always to watch, but I thought I was competitive until I saw that. And then, I mean, there's this one scene, I think, before they play the Seattle Supersonics, and he sees the opposing coach in the restaurant, and the coach doesn't talk to him.
Yeah.
So that was the motivation to go win the series. And I'm like, wow, that's next level. But yeah, look, I mean, I think everyone uses that. I think at the end of the day, if you're building a business and an entrepreneurial opportunity that is going to be successful, no one along the way is giving you high fives and telling you that's, you're on the right track, keep going, this is fantastic. You're going to face resistance. And in fact, the resistance often, counterintuitively, is the sign that you're on the right track. And the question is, how are you going to filter in your own mind the feedback that comes at you? Because if you're not seeking feedback from experts, and then you're dumb. But if you're listening to it, to all of it, you're not going to make the progress that you need. You actually sort of need to almost take this expert sentiment and try and understand how they're missing the thing that you believe, and use that as sort of fuel to drive through the barrier to go through and prove them wrong. And so that can become a very, very powerful technique. And it still is. I mean, I think you position yourself as the underdog. And for us, we look at this category, and you mentioned some of the competitors in it, and you sort of say, wow, the resources we have are tiny compared to how can we compete? And then you sort of say, well, we're going to do it better. We're going to be smarter. And what we're doing is we've got this edge. So using that, I think, is just a tool, and people do that in their own ways. But I think the thing that I took from The Last Dance, you know, the person and the character that I gravitated to in that documentary was Steve Kerr. I feel like I saw in him a lot of what I tried to do as a player. I thought the way that he articulated and spoke about the team and his role within it was so eloquent. And I think he's done that in the context of sort of the NBA as a leader and a coach. And it's about, I think the thing that I took about that as it relates to teams is, yeah, you'll have stars and you'll have different people that can, but a team is such a fascinating thing. You needed a Dennis Rodman to do the dirty defensive work. And you needed a Steve Kerr who was prepared to not seek the limelight and play a very small role, but be ready when he was ready. And I just think that was the bit that I was fascinated by, the way that those pieces sort of fit together so that something could be be successful.
Yeah, I love learning and understanding the mindset of athletes. And I'm so happy to talk to you because there's very few that I get to talk to who then go and build businesses or do it while they're actually playing and do it from a standpoint of a real gritty startup. Talking about that, can you take me back to Allbirds and originally coming up with the concept and the naysayers and stories of how you kind of got to the point where you finally started to say, okay, let me see if I can make this into a business, and how you were able to do that and how you were able to overcome all of these naysayers? Was there a specific time that was kind of make or break?
Sure. So started working on the shoe idea. I'd been to a couple of shoe factories, literally on a plane in my off season, made, I think 1,000 pairs of shoes that I sold to my teammates and others, and then realized the sort of material opportunity. So combined the design with this idea of wool. And of course, there was no material that existed. So there was a research grant, and another year or two went by. And ultimately went to the World Cup, retired in 2012, and found myself in London at business school. And ultimately in the classroom of a professor actually at Northwestern, Kellogg University, just outside of Chicago, and an entrepreneurial class with a professor called Carter Cast. And a fascinating guy. He used to be the CEO of Walmart.com, swam at Stanford, so he had a sporting background. And we just kind of, sometimes you go and do something, and I'd retired from sport and I did a lot of stuff and really interested. You know, that class was the reason I retired. And he called me in at the end of this class, and it was a business class. And I pitched the idea of wool shoes, and it kind of got accepted. And I ran it through the class for 10 weeks with this small team. And it was fascinating. And got to the end of the class, he kind of called me into his office and he goes, look, I think this is a horrible idea that you're working on. You know nothing about shoes. I don't think it's going to work. But for whatever reason, of everyone in the class, you seem more determined to actually turn this into something. And so throw it up on Kickstarter or something so it can fail, and then you can get on with your life. Because I was warming up in front of the camera, pretty wooden, not very aware of how I was going to shoot this video. And my brother electrocuted himself on a fence on the sheep farm. And that was the moment where we ended up laughing and we put this video out. And it ended up, you know, I had 1,000 pairs of shoes to sell. We sold $125,000 in 4 days, and I had to shut the Kickstarter campaign down very quickly. There was interest, media interest from around the world. And when I look back on it, I'd sort of hit this nerve, this sort of product market fit type sort of concept with an early stage business. But it was horrible and scary, but it was the beginning.
I love that story because this is a professor, and I've heard this millions of times, from FedEx to there's been so many stories about really bright people who have said this won't work, and then entrepreneurs go out and they prove it wrong. Was this a point, when we talk about mindset and thinking about Jordan and yourself, was that a point where you like, I'm going to show this person? Or, you know, because that's so hard. A lot of people just fold up 10.
Well, I just like to acknowledge that Michael Jordan and myself were mentioned in the same sentence there for the first and only time in my life. So I just want to pause.
One day he might be happy to be mentioned with you. I'll tell you that.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. Look, I think Carter, of course, was very hard on me in that moment, and now he's an investor and a friend and someone that I go to for advice. And there's been a pattern of that through my life where, at first glance, you might assume that someone's being dismissive of you, your idea, your abilities. But if you look closer, and I probably fortuitously had a couple of moments in the context of sport where I realized that the person that was doing that was not being tough on me because they didn't care. They were being quite the opposite, tough on me because they saw potential and opportunity and they didn't want me to waste it. And if I look back on that moment, I could have walked out of that office and said, guy doesn't know what he's talking about, he's an idiot. Or I could have said, you know what? And maybe this is just selective listening. I was like, of all the talent and the brains in that room, he sort of circled me out and said, hey, you were the one that really sort of tried the hardest in this little moment. And I took that as an enormous compliment. And I literally took his guidance to heart and went and sort of ran with it. So, you know, and I think oftentimes I don't really like the word mentor necessarily, but the people that have guided me, the true friends, the sort of the supporters that have pushed me to go to the next level, have often been the ones that have been most honest. And I don't think of course you want cheerleaders and supporters around you, but you also want people that are going to tell you the truth and trust they're doing that because they care. And if you find them, hold on to them, because it's a rare thing and it could be very, very helpful.
Yeah, I love that. That's exactly right. And I love your story because there is a large percentage of people who would have walked out of that room and put their head down and said, you know what, forget doing a kickstart for this isn't going to work. But you end up doing it. And over 4 days, you get all these orders. Now, I know as an entrepreneur, because now you're like, oh my God, this is great. This works. But like, you, I assume you don't have supply chain. Like how did you have to get kind of down and dirty right then and deliver?
It's always those love-hate moments, right? I think about it with sport. It was like, oh, you want to really play for your country, or you want to play professionally, and then you get that opportunity and you're like, oh, I don't really want to do this. It's too hard.
Yeah.
You know? It was a similar moment. And that year that followed that was probably one of the hardest in my life in terms of kicking this off. And of course, you know, and I don't want to play out the cliches, but you look back on it and all the things you learned and all the things you had to do and the customer service that you were responsible for as the leader of a larger business now, where I don't have to do some of those things and on a day-to-day basis, it was invaluable. But you know, I think you just kick into gear and you go for it. And I was very, very fortunate. And I just always want to kind of acknowledge that I tried to quit this thing multiple times. And I talk about that openly. And if not for my family and the people close to me sort of being that safety network and support system, I wouldn't have been able to. So I was very, very fortuitous. And certainly in the context of the moment we're in, you know, it's not a level playing field. And for me, for everyone, for me, that family, and not that they were contributing money and not that I came from wealth, but I did come from a lot of love. And I think that allows you to sort of go forward. And I remember a conversation with my dad where he was sort of, you need laugh. And I remember calling him at one point sort of when I'd just been released by a couple of clubs in England trying to find a professional contract. And he's like, look, it's sunny and warm here in New Zealand and you're in a rainy phone box in the UK, but don't call me for permission to quit. You've gone way further than I could have and we're proud of you, but you haven't finished this. So only you get to put up the white flag. I don't get to tell you that, but it's going to be okay. And we're here and I've got to get back to the barbecue. So, you know, and it's, you know, and so that's been my unfair advantage is that support. And I, you know, so you keep going back and you go again and you go again and you know that ultimately it's going to be okay and you'd be better for the experience for doing it. And that certainly was the experience post Kickstarter. And I kept going and ultimately met Joey and Allbirds was born.
So tell me about Joey and meeting Joey and how Allbirds was actually born.
Our wives were roommates in college. I was struggling at the end of that year of Kickstarter. It was clear there was potential. It was also clear that it was extraordinarily hard to make shoes, extraordinarily yeah. hard to build a supply chain and make shoes out of materials that had never been used before with no funding. So I was kind of funding it from my own savings and with no knowledge really of how to do that. And got to the end of that year and I actually got an investment offer. Someone offered to put a little bit of money in and I called around my friends as you do in these moments and sort of said, hey, what do you think of this? And everyone gave me the perfunctory sort of 2 minutes. And this thing is obviously complicated. And my wife suggested I speak with Joey and I got on the phone and this guy who I'd met at weddings and we'd been friends, he gave me an hour and he'd gone through this in detail. And he said, you know, he gave me 10 reasons why this was a horrible, horrible way to go. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later called me back and said, but hang on a minute, why don't we do it? He'd been a customer of the Kickstarter. He was aware. We talked about it previously and things. He was equally seeing, he had a different vision for the world that sustainability and the challenge of making things with zero impact on the environment was going to be the problem of our generation. And that many industries, including the fashion one, was behind. And yep. It was an opportunity to build a successful business, but also one that you'd tell your grandkids had been a part of sort of really leading this significant change. And so I got on a plane from London, where we were living, to San Francisco, where Joey was from, and his young family were away. And I did it kind of on a whim. And we spent 48 hours together, kind of on walks, hikes, getting quite drunk, getting to know each other, imagining the company that we could build together. And I kind of flew back and I said to my girlfriend, now wife, hey, we've got to move to San Francisco because we are, you know, this is the person to build this thing.
And what'd she say?
Let's do it. To her enormous credit. To her enormous credit. Let's do it. And it wasn't much more than that. So I owe her immensely.
You know, just the foresight, like you talked about your partner, Joey, with sustainability. And really, we're only going back, right? 5 or 6 years. But just think how much has changed with Greta and the world over. And obviously, we'll talk about going through the times we are now. But it seems to me, you felt, look, you had a great product. And the fact that sustainability was becoming so much more important, to me, it puts you on this perfect path. And did it start right away? Were you like, when you launched, what was your expectations and what did you actually achieve?
Well, it's such an interesting question, you know, I mean, and such an interesting point that how fast this conversation has moved. And Joey, one of the really interesting things was that he saw sustainability not as an environmental opportunity, but of course that was the reason, but as a business opportunity, that the businesses that would prepare now for the challenge of climate change would be the ones that would win in the long run. And that people didn't buy sustainable products, they bought great products.
Yeah.
And that part of the confusion around that conversation is that those two things were seen as sort of mutually exclusive. And so could we actually, in this very narrow niche of footwear, change that? And we didn't set out to build a sustainable brand. We set out to build a great business that at its core had the environment at its center. And that nuance was quite important. And we leveraged a direct business model. So rather than wholesale, which dominates the footwear space, a direct business model to sell what was for the first 18 months, really one shoe made of different types of materials in a direct relationship with the customer as a vertical retailer. And that's what we did. It was all online and it was successful. And we went to our suppliers and our factories and we sort of said, hey, we want to pay up because we had the margin room to do so for sustainable materials and the individual components of the shoe. And there's many of them, the heel counter. We wanted those to be, in any given case, never in conflict with the performance of the product, but as environmentally thoughtful as they possibly could be. And our factories would turn around and go, but why? Why would you do this? No one is going to know. Nice. Yeah, no one's going to know. And this is like, why not use the synthetic version? Because it's a fraction of the cost. And you like, you know, and fast forward 3 years, I would sort of say 3 years, all of a sudden people started to understand that we weren't joking around. This was a non-negotiable for us. And they started to come to us with ideas and options and opportunities. And in many cases, these ideas have been around for decades. They'd lay dormant because no one was prepared to pay a little bit more. And all of a sudden, right, this business came along. And it was part, you know, what we realized was we were kind of hoovering up all this great innovation and ideas that didn't have a market. And, you know, now 18 months ago, 2 years ago, Greta Thunberg, the young girl, yep, from Sweden, skips school on a Friday and starts protesting on the steps of the Swedish parliament. The youth protests begin and there is an acceleration in the conversation of the urgency around the environment, and it's happened quickly. But this thing still's got a long way to go, don't get me wrong. But I think we're incredibly heartened by the acceleration of people's empathy for this topic.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. We all know that the work you do matters, no matter where you do it from. And nowadays, we are all doing it from a lot of different places. The good news is, I know a trusted company called WebEx. WebEx provides simple and reliable video communication tools that will allow you and your team to connect and collaborate securely. WebEx can take care of business anywhere you are. And no one doing business right now can afford to have their video conference bombed or their privacy compromised. WebEx is perfect as it allows you to work remotely and, most importantly, securely. When it comes to remote work from home and you need to get stuff done and security matters, you can definitely trust WebEx. Look, I know there are heads of state, governments, schools, hospitals that all trust WebEx. It is definitely my choice for secure video conferencing and collaboration. Oh, and another thing I love about WebEx, WebEx can do virtual happy hours and weddings too. That's right. Hashtag life on WebEx. So if you can imagine it, WebEx can build the bridge to get you there.
And our next sponsor.
How Success Happens is brought to you by JustWorks. JustWorks is here to support the small business superheroes working hard to protect their companies and take care of their teams. With simple software and expert support for payroll, benefits, compliance, and HR, JustWorks takes some of the guesswork out of running a business in good times and bad. They know small business leaders wear many hats, and they're here to help you do it all. With JustWorks, you get seamless tools for managing remote teams and navigating new legislation. This includes scheduling, tracking, and staying compliant with new leave requirements from day one. Their dedicated team of certified HR consultants can help you navigate the ins and outs of managing remote teams in these challenging times. And should you or your team ever have any questions about your benefits or payroll, you can call JustWorks anytime, really anytime. 11 p.m. on Sunday, sure, their round-the-clock support team is standing by. JustWorks is here for those who do it all. Learn more at justworks.com/success. That's justworks.com/success.
And we're back. How do you think that impact your customer, right? There's people out there, unfortunately, that don't care. They're saying, I want the quality. But then there's a lot more customers today, which is really great, who are understanding, hey, like as you said, you want a good product. That's probably number one. But the sustainable aspect and the ethos of a company that they're doing good is definitely important. But how much of the Allbirds customer is driven by product and the other part sustainability? Is it a mix? How do you determine that?
It's interesting. I think people, almost everyone, I think has an empathy and understanding of the topic of sustainability, and they realize there's a problem, but it's disconnected from the way they behave. So, I mean, if you just ask yourself, like, do you care? Do you, you know, think climate change is important? Is sustainability an issue we should be thinking about? Let's just sort of say you agree. But if I ask you to audit the purchases that you've made in the last week or month, they probably don't factor into the way that you've gone to the supermarket necessarily or bought a cup of coffee. You know, it's just, there's a disconnect there. And often, and certainly when we started, our sense was that when you use the word sustainability, not only is it polarizing, but people assume there's a trade-off in quality, i.e. I'm paying more for something that's less good. So hence why we focused on making great products. And we actually didn't talk so much about that because quite frankly, we didn't quite understand how to at that time. I mean, fast forward 4 years, we've evolved that definition now to be that people don't buy sustainable products, they buy great products. But for a product to be truly great, it must also be sustainable. We need to do both. But this is the problem is not going to be solved by you waking up, Robert, tomorrow, and all of a sudden, even if you could, buying sustainably or living sustainably, it just doesn't exist as a concept. It's about businesses that make the existing things that you love more thoughtfully and more efficiently. And that's the challenge we have to set ourselves. And business has got an enormous role to play here. And it's an innovation challenge rather than a sort of a social issue. And I think it's about finding more efficient ways to make the products and services that we love. And I think there's a way to do it. If we can put a man on the moon, we can make a t-shirt and a pair of sneakers with net zero impact. We just can. The fact is we haven't really focused on it to this point.
Yeah, it is. It's manpower and what you focus on, just like now with the pandemic going on and focusing on a vaccine. When you have people focusing and things get done quicker and it's easier. But look, so you guys relaunched, you've been working on this for a while, but the real business with Joey, is that 5 years ago now?
Yeah, so we came together in 2015 and Allbirds launched officially in America and New Zealand online on the 1st of March 2016. Two of us were working out of his mother-in-law's house in San Rafael, just outside of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And we now have 18 retail stores and offices in London and in Berlin, a small one, and China, selling in, I think, 20-odd countries around the world and a little bit less than 500 employees. And so we've grown a lot and we're just a little bit over 4 years old. So,
but how does that, okay, this is what I don't get. You've gone to $1 billion, maybe multi-billion dollar valuation on this business. You've built it up incredibly, like you just said, in 4 years. How the hell did you guys do that? Like, I just, to me, that's one of the most incredible aspects of the Allbirds story. Like, we're talking 4 years. How did you guys do that? Like, just logistically, and I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it was the combination of a big dream. And I think we had that from that first weekend together. I'd been making shoes and realizing that wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do, maybe, but met Joey and realized there was an environmental purpose and a larger challenge that we committed to and doubled down on. And that became the beating heart of business that we imagined together when there was just two of us. And then it's been sort of juxtaposed against really, really small steps. We've been extraordinarily focused. And in the footwear industry, traditionally, you have ranges and you change lots of SKUs. And we sold literally 1 million pairs through the first couple of years of one shoe, the Wool Runner, our first style. And so we were extraordinarily focused, and that focus extended to meetings and how we used our time. And then we used the purpose and the larger vision to sort of attract this incredibly talented group of people that were there to really sort of build this thing in the right way. And I think we were very, very honest from the beginning too about the one or two things that we did well, probably leaning on my sporting experience, that I wasn't Michael Jordan, that I was more Steve Kerr, and that there was a couple of things that I contribute and I owned them. but equally that there was a lot of things that I didn't, and that we needed to go hire Michael Jordans and all the other different parts of the team that would help it win. And I think we did that early on. And so we were able to attract these really sort of senior leaders and experienced people to build brand and supply chain. And we've worked with them to do that. And so combination of those factors and a lot of good luck and a lot of hard work, and we've made some real progress. But, you know, I certainly feel today that there's a long, long way for us to go. And you know, I think we've had that mindset too. I don't think that there's been no early high fives. We realized that the challenge we set for ourselves when there was just two of us was to find out how to make products with net zero impact, and we haven't got there yet. In fact, we've got a long way to go to sort that out.
Don't forget to smell the roses, right? So many entrepreneurs just head down, and I just think that that's so important. And one of the things that I think I would imagine makes you feel good is you're using a product wool, which a lot of us know, New Zealand, probably extremely well known for that. And also, from what I believe has been less used. It must make you feel good if this is the truth, that you've really helped your entire country and industry. I would assume if you're using wool now from New Zealand. And is that part of the Allbirds story?
It's definitely part of the connection. Like I am a New Zealander, and that's kind of where my heart is in terms of where I grew up and where my family is. And we live in San Francisco, and we built Allbirds there. And I absolutely love that place and it's home now. But the idea that the business has a connection back to New Zealand and a connection back to this fiber and the wool industry that is such an important part of sort of New Zealand's economy and history, and that has been struggling for so long. And I think part of our story has been that we have shown that the material of wool and natural materials more broadly have a real role to play in set that show to the farmers back there, you know, who we see and have built relationships with, that the hard work that they're doing is having a moment. And, you know, it's a more complicated topic than we have time for now, but
yep.
Regenerative agriculture and the idea that the primary industries have long been held out as sort of maybe some of the villains in the conversation around sort of environmental degradation and climate change, actually, when farming is done the right way, represent one of the biggest levers that we can pull for limiting climate change and improving the environment is a really exciting future topic that we're heavily involved in. And so, you know, yeah, it's a real source of pride. But I mean, it's not just us. There's lots of other brands that are doing it that are understanding the sort of the miracles of the natural world, really, and starting to use them and innovate in that space and getting off the idea that sort of cheap synthetics are really where we need to be going.
You know, it's taken me about 40 minutes to get there, and we're getting towards the end, but how has COVID affected? I mean, this COVID, and I don't know if it's how it's affected you guys. I'd love to learn. I imagine this is maybe one of the first real big, big challenges worldwide you may have faced, but has COVID impacted your business one way or the other?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, earlier this year, we had our Australia and New Zealand e-commerce businesses sort of go completely lights out as they shut down sort of all non-essential business in those parts of the world. We had 14 of our 18 retail stores shut down around the world, and it was a really scary moment. And like everyone else, we kind of bunkered down, and the future was uncertain. And you know, it still is in some ways. Although I think we've seen extraordinary resilience in our business, and we very early on kind of committed to keeping our entire team together and avoiding any layoffs. And we'd had prepared the business with a rainy day fund, capitalized it really well, that allowed us to sort of come through some of those hairier moments and keep our team together, which we were very proud of. And we saw our community about to be very supportive of some of the initiatives we did in that moment, and donating shoes to healthcare workers and a few other things. And ultimately we've come at it well. So we're looking ahead to a year where it's nowhere near the growth that maybe we imagined before it, but we're still going to grow. And I think we're really proud of that. It speaks to maybe the way that we've built the business thoughtfully before that. But I mean, this moment is remarkable and unique and full of pain for a lot of people. I guess the hope is, particularly as it relates to our purpose, I think what you've also seen is people not commuting and a complete reduction in carbon emissions globally, and air purity in cities, and nature broadly fighting back. You've seen coyotes on the Golden Gate Bridge and bald eagles in Central Park. And you've seen also too, I think, for the most part, not always, a global community come together to fight a challenge that doesn't really respect traditional borders and ways of working. And I think as you look forward to the challenge of climate change, I think there's a lot of hope you can take from that and a lot of possibility to maybe tackle this challenge that at times is feeling like it's overwhelming. So I think that's a positive. And like anything else, you know, in the midst of these things, you've got to give yourself permission to imagine the positive lessons that we're going to take from it. And I hope there's many, and that's very easy for me to say. And when you've lost your job and all the other challenges that so many people are facing, it's hard to actually realize, but there will be good things that come out of this. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, no, I love your attitude, man. I love that. I think that's just so, for all the entrepreneurs and knowing them and talking, like optimism and being able to be persistent and overcome challenges. And I love how you talk about the positives that are going to come out of this. And you said something about the carbon emissions, which is, it's really been incredible if anyone knows about that, just in terms of the benefit this lockdown has had. But you guys also, can you talk about your carbon footprint initiative? Because you are ahead of this, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the topic of sustainability is such a confusing one, and it's been used and defined in so many different ways. And I think part of that, that's part of the problem, quite frankly. And it means 10 different things to 10 different people. So to one, it's microplastics. To the other, it's recyclability. And to another, it's air quality and land use and so on and so forth. And it goes on and on and on. And the fact is, all of those things are important. They're all issues, and we need to think about them and improve on them. But where we've landed as a business is that all of those ideas must ladder up to this unifying metric around carbon. Carbon being the singular scorecard that connects all birds with the broader footwear industry and America with New Zealand and the fashion industry with the transport industry. And it's the singular scorecard that we all ultimately contribute to. And there's a global number that is too high. And in this year, it's largely thanks to COVID, it's going to come down something like 10% maybe. But that's not enough. We need to consistently innovate across every category, every product and service that we use, every part of the world to find net zero ways to live. And so that's been our understanding. We've been on a journey, a little bit of a cliched way to have that clarity. And what it allows you to do is make decisions, and make decisions not based on the heart, but on the head. So specifically, we're labeling every product that we make with the kilograms of carbon that are emitted in their production. And the same way that nutrition, calories might go on food, there is an ability to take this huge global number that we're all connected to and boil it down, Robert, to your individual life over a year. And boil it down to a single product. Every product effectively has a number. And that concept has been quite liberating for us. And so we've labeled our products. We hope others will follow. We are now tracking our shoes. On average, it's a little less than 10. I think around 9 kilograms of carbon are emitted when we make a pair of shoes. On average, we think the footwear industry is somewhere, they don't really publish it, but it's somewhere from 15 to 25 on average. We actually just announced a partnership with Adidas, actually, which was a big, big moment for us to collaborate on the idea of making this shoe as close to zero as possible more quickly than we could ourselves, which was a really, really exciting, validating moment. And also an acknowledgement, too, that this challenge is not an all birds one. This is an everyone.
Yeah, I would imagine the Adidas and these guys definitely have their radar on you guys, and like just from the whole industry, just what you've done authentically. I want to talk about something close. I'm an experience person, events, experiences. Retail has been a big part of the Allbirds for, even though you started, like you said, with Kickstarter and selling basically through the web. But tell me why retail is so important to the Allbirds story.
So we bought our first store. I think we spent $6,000 or something on it, and it was tiny, like a shoebox, literally.
It's pretty good rent for San Francisco, right?
And it was right underneath our first office, and what we sort of found was that it was just incredible fun. And I think both Joey and I are sort of junkies for feedback, I think, a little bit. And at the end of the day, you're making a product for someone, and so what better way to do that than actually see them try it on and get their reaction straight away. And we had this vertical model that allowed us to, so no wholesale, no middlemen. So effectively, we'd get a piece of feedback on the shop floor downstairs. We'd run up to our office above and we'd flow that into making the product better. And we realized that we could also do that through our customer service, and became sort of the engine that fueled our innovation. And we realized that we could move really fast in the way that we'd set that up. And it was just extraordinary fun. And then you realize too that we were all about materials. And when the people came in to try our shoes, they got to feel it and touch it, and they had a lot of questions, and they wanted to know not just
where the wool came from, but the name of the farm in New Zealand that it was sourced from. Awesome. And the fact that we could tell them that really started to inform how we presented our digital business. And so, you know, we just fell in love with it. And I equally think that we looked at traditionally the way that shoes are retailed as having room for improvement. You know, and everyone's got this sort of memory of a childhood memory of shopping for shoes. Everyone wants to do it, I think, but they've got this idea that, you know, they go into a shoe store and some store clerk disappears into a subterranean basement, comes back, doesn't have your size,
yeah,
fits you with that metal thing that no one knows the name of. And it's just, you know, you sit on an uncomfortable bench and it's generally sort of not always great. And so how could we really lean into it and hire really talented people that were, you know, sort of part of our, you know, connected to what we were trying to do. And it's been so much fun. And we've just got this amazing group. Our first real store was in Soho in New York, and it's just been phenomenal. Dario and Jeff are the managers there. And if I've got a question about a product, Jeff's the assistant manager. Dario's great as well in our Soho store in New York. I give them a call because, oh yeah, my gosh, he's going to know 30 stories from the last week about a problem that these guys are having or not having with this product. And it's a trove of information. And that's sort of how we've leaned into it. And I think it's got amazing potential for us as a channel.
Do you look at growing that channel? Because it seems to me these retail locations are such a part of the authenticity and experience. Do you see this as especially with COVID and just what's happened in retail in general, do you actually see this as a growth area?
Yeah, absolutely. One of our board members is the founder of Warby Parker, smart guy.
Great guy. Is it Neil? Brumel.
Neil, yeah.
I just interviewed Neil last week.
Yeah, good. So I'm glad you did. I'm sure it was a great chat. And his quote, I might butcher it, but something along the lines of basically retail's not dying, just bad retail. And so the idea that you just sort of open a store and chuck in a cash register and just sort of set people to work is sort of the old model. And I think that, you know, people are craving connection and community and understanding and knowledge and great experience. And it's not easy to work in an all-bird store. You need to know an enormous amount about the products. And then you're expected to be able to answer those questions. And we just got this incredible group that we've recruited, and many of them stay with us and go into other parts of the business. Some of them go on to other things. Some of them at college and university, but, you know, hopefully it's a situation where they have all birds on their resume and it's something they're really proud of. And it becomes, that's certainly been the goal for the way that we've tried to build retail. And as a business channel, it's this wonderful complement for our online business. And what we find is that the interplay between the online and offline is a fascinating opportunity, and that the stores become marketing devices as much as they do sales channels. And that when you're putting a store on Newbury Street in Boston, that becomes a billboard of sorts and a statement of intent. And when you're in the Viaduct in Auckland, in New Zealand, something similar. So we've fallen in love with it, and it's a big, big opportunity for us moving forward.
Before we let you go, I want to ask you one last question. And I know you're a professional athlete, a captain, I'm sure in the past. Are there things that are different, or do you really view it now and being successful in both, do you view it as the same?
I think the foundation of your values are the same. I think it's different sort of practically in so many different ways. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think the way that I try and think about it, and maybe one of the most important similarities, is that each time you go out and play a soccer game on the weekend, you'd either win or you'd lose. And then sometimes you'd lose and you'd actually won, and sometimes you were winning and you're actually losing. Like the short-term signals can be distracting, and you need to really focus on kind of winning the league at the end of the year. And to do that, you just need to have a very, very clear vision, and you need to fundamentally believe and buy into the idea of team, of course, and culture, and of habits and behaviors that ladder up to the idea that the group believes in the compounding impact of sort of getting a little bit better every day. That if you come in and you do the right things and you get a little, you know, you're curious and you have an improvement mindset over the long term, that can compound into something really powerful. So you need the big vision and the big dream, but you can't be demoralized in the short term if you lose a few games. You've got to stay in the moment, keep doing the little things to get a little bit better. And over time, I've found that success will find you. And that's sort of, you know, the way that I kind of approach it. And the last thing I'd say is there's lots of different ways to win in sport. And I certainly, if we go back to The Last Dance, that was a tense, difficult team atmosphere. It didn't mean they didn't win. But I don't think anyone watched that game and wished that they could be a bench player on the Chicago Bulls and that would be fun. I think that there's lots of different ways to win. And I think Joey and I believe that there's a way where you can win where you laugh a lot. And I don't think high performance teams are ever families. And I don't think great work teams are ever families. I think that's a different thing. It's a different part of your life, but they can be very personal and they can be built on friendships and deep relationships and they can be fun and you can laugh a lot. And the best teams that I were ever a part of, quite tough with each other, but they're also extraordinarily close. And that's what I think we've tried to foster. And that's certainly the sort of the red thread between my two experiences.
No, that was perfectly said. So I just want to thank you again, taking the time. Best of luck, man. You guys are crushing it and just doing good for the world. And I wish you nothing but more success. I'm sure it's going to come. So thanks so much, Tim.
Well, I hope so. And I really appreciate the thoughtfulness of your questions, mate. Great to chat with you.
Yeah, you got it.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.